Greetings, greetings, once again, to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors. But we do focus you on the news of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everyone back here on our final Sunday of 2015. And I'm joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer who will be helping with the broadcast today. As we go worldwide on the World Wide Web, unconstrained by the traditional bounds of the broadcast media, right here at the Weekly Worldview. Welcome. Where do we want to start? Where should we start? Should I go right to the culture? I suppose I have to, because this is just an embarrassing story for everyone involved, and I just want to get it out there. NBC News reported this past week that Bristol Palin has announced the birth of her second child. You remember Bristol Palin? She's the dim-witted daughter of that dim-witted politician from Alaska. What's her name? Sarah Palin. Sarah Palin's daughter. Palin, you'll remember Bristol. Bristol, the daughter. She launched an abstinence campaign after giving birth to her first child out of wedlock. Just let that sink in for a second. This is what our culture has degenerated to. A celebrity, a serial fornicator, has a child out of wedlock, and she's invited by America to start an abstinence campaign. Yeah, that was back in 2008, if you recall. This child that has just been announced, This is Bristol's second child out of wedlock. NBC reports that she was engaged earlier this year, but the wedding was called off days before the ceremony was set to go off. Apparently, the fiancé found out that Bristol Palin is a white trash serial fornicator. Anyway, one of the reasons this is so embarrassing is that she was engaged to a Medal of Honor recipient, one Dakota Meyer. And he posted on social media that the child is in fact his. But here at the Weekly Worldview, we want to tell Dakota to just hold your horses there, young Marine. Wait for the paternity test before you assume that the child is yours. Now, yes, this story simply blurs the lines between right and wrong, conservative and liberal, shameful and honorable, pathetic and heroic. Bristol Palin, she's a slut, and she gets herself pregnant on a fairly regular basis, at least so far. And she's held up as almost some kind of hero, and certainly as some kind of Republican spokesperson. If you Google up her name, you'll hear all kinds of commentary on politics and society and religion and all of that. And it's just embarrassing. And one must ask oneself, how is it that this happened to Bristol Palin, that she turned out to be a serially fornicating slut? Well, there were three strikes against Bristol Palin. Well, even when she was just a child, she had three strikes against her. First of all, her rather dim-witted mother sacrificed her to the public schools on a daily basis for 12 or 13 years. So she had public school going against her. That was strike one. Second, she belonged to a mainline evangelical youth group at a mainline evangelical church. It's kind of hard to nail down what church Sarah Palin raised her children in, but it's either a non-denominational church, or it's an Assemblies of God church with the Pentecostals and the speaking in tongues and the waving of hands and the rolling around on the floor and all that. But she was a member of the youth group. That was strike two. And then strike three, of course, was the pop culture. She was allowed to be exposed by her parents to the filth of the pop culture so that she was sexually irresponsible from quite an early age, I'm sure. And it's just embarrassing. Bristol Palin, her mother should make an announcement that she's ashamed of her daughter, that she can't keep her pants on, and that it's just disgusting. But she'll probably be offered a reality show. Yeah, and that's where we are. Not to start out on a downer note, but that is where we are, unfortunately. All right. Now, we'll move from the blurring of those lines to some blurring of other lines. Very well-established lines are being blurred all over American civilization. According to LifeSite News, the New York City Commission on Human Rights has issued new rules for employers, directing them on how to refer to transsexuals and how to not get in trouble. They are going to fine violators who discriminate against trannies by referring to them by their real gender. I like the way LifeSite News puts that. If you refer to a tranny by their real gender, you could be fined up to $250,000 from a pile of deviants at the New York City Human Rights, what's it called? The New York City Commission on Human Rights. You're not allowed, if a tranny, well, let's just read from their ruling. Refusal to use a transgender employee's preferred name, pronoun, or title may constitute unlawful gender-based harassment. Gender is defined as one's actual or perceived sex and shall also include a person's gender identity, self-image, appearance, behavior, or expressions. Whether or not that gender identity, self-image, appearance, behavior, or expression is different from that traditionally associated with the legal sex assigned to that person at birth. So please, just stop it. Refusing to allow individuals to utilize single-sex facilities and programs is against New York City law. So, boys may use girls' toilets, showers, and locker rooms, and girls may participate in boys' activities, regardless of their sex assigned at birth, anatomy, medical history, appearance, or the sex indicated on their ID card. Forcing a transgender or gender non-conforming person to use the single occupancy bathroom is discrimination. So cut it out, or we'll fine you. So it's a ban on pronouns, certain pronouns. Well, it's a ban on the use of certain pronouns in certain ways, which indeed is, it's just rather, what's the word I'm looking for? It's Orwellian is what it is. It's like newspeak. The new rules indicate that a woman's homeless shelter may not turn away a man who identifies as a woman on any given particular night, and a men's shelter may not deny service to a woman who wants to be a man. So that's fraught with peril. So if you beat up your girlfriend and she ends up in a shelter and you feel like you maybe want to beat her up some more, just go to the shelter and claim that you're identifying as a woman. And you cannot be turned away, and then you could go and you could beat on your girlfriend some more. That's just brilliant. So that's where we are. Okay, that's New York City, right? To be expected? No, it's not to be expected. Not even in New York City. It's embarrassing. It's disgusting. And let's see. Do I have anything that might be uplifting? Well, let's just do this Muslim story. I want to get to this. I've got a report from The Nation. The Nation magazine. Are you guys familiar with this magazine? It's a leftist propaganda rag published by homos and other various deviants. So I would not consider it the greatest source of news, but they are reporting that on Monday, this past Monday, a terrorist attack on a bus in Kenya failed when Muslim passengers threw themselves over Christians to shield them from the Islamists' wrath. The governor of the county or whatever it is there, the state there in Kenya, said the Muslims stood with the Christians and dared the attackers to kill them or leave. Now, the militants attempted, I hate that word, militants. Why don't they just call them terrorists? The terrorists attempted to separate Muslims from Christians, but the Muslims refused. Survivors testified that the Muslims dared the terrorists to kill them. They told the attackers to kill all the passengers or leave, and apparently the attackers left, the terrorists left, which is unusual. This was an Al-Shabaab operation. Not famous for refusing the opportunity to murder as many people as possible, Muslim or not. A survivor of this attack told this whole story to The Nation magazine. We've not been able to corroborate this is true, but we hope it is true. Now, the terrorists did kill two people, and they injured three others, people who were trying to run away. But it looks like the Muslims, by the way, Al-Shabaab, as I'm sure you know, has a history of separating Christians from Muslims and then killing the Christians. Back in April, you'll remember Al-Shabaab terrorists killed 148 and injured over 100 at Garissa University. Witnesses heard the terrorists demand that the students recite the Quran, and anyone who could not cite the Quran or who identified themselves as a Christian was shot and killed. So, listen, I believe that Muslims can be decent and even heroic people, but their religion is pagan. And it's dangerous and it's violent. And if you actually read the book and follow the teachings of Muhammad, it's inherently dangerous, destabilizing, violent, and evil. And Islam should not be promoted as good, nor should it be promoted as a religion of peace. And what these Muslims did, if indeed the story is true, it was a very Christian thing to do, to lay down your life. For the life of your friends. And they should be educated that what they did was in line with Christian teaching and, in fact, not in line with what Muhammad would have urged them to do. All right. So there we have that. A little bit uplifting, maybe. Anyway. We'll go to the politics file, and we'll try again here. The governor of Kentucky has stepped up in the row surrounding Kim Davis and other county clerks who did not want to issue licenses to homosexuals to get married. So the Kentucky Republican Governor Matt Bevin has ordered the state to prepare new marriage licenses that do not include the names of the county clerks, and he says he's doing it to protect the religious beliefs of Clerk Kim Davis and others. This is from our License to Sin file. Governor has given the county clerks a license to sin, encouraged by the lawyers. The governor says he's implemented a real solution that will help the people of Kentucky. The Democratic Speaker of the Kentucky House applauded the governor. Yes, applauded the governor giving them a license to sin for whatever reason. It's just embarrassing. So you got to figure if the Democratic Speaker of the Kentucky House is applauding the governor for, quote, finding a way to balance the law and the concerns of county clerks. I applaud, said the Democrat Speaker of the House. And according to this report from Fox News, one of Kim Davis's deputy clerks has been issuing altered marriage licenses to homosexuals since September that do not include Kim Davis's name or the name of the county in which the license was granted. And I guess, you know, since we're going to make believe that homos can get married, we might as well use made up make believe documents. Yeah, why not? It's all make believe anyways. The lawyers have made believe that they found a workaround Kim Davis's conscience, and the homos are pretending they can be married, and all the normal people are pretending the homos can be married too. So everyone's gone insane, and Kim Davis's lawyers and her counsel and all those advising her have given not only Kim Davis a license to sin, but they've given all these deviant perverts a license to sin, further entrenching them in their rebellion against God and practically ensuring their eternal damnation. Yes. Yes, thank you. The thing is the marriage licenses issued in Kentucky are a lot like that song. Look at it any which way you want. Try to read it. Try to listen to it. Try to make sense of it. And you just can't figure out what's going on. It's just impossible to understand anything about it. But we did get that Hammond B3 in there. Yes, lost since the early 90s. The Hammond B3 makes a comeback here at the Weekly Worldview, thanks to my extremely attractive audio engineer. Thank you very much. All right. Yes, I had a story I intended to open with, and I just found it. So, and no wonder I felt so discombobulated. I did not want to start with that Bristol Palin story. That is not where I wanted to go right off the top. I had a much more lighthearted, entertaining story that we'll get to right now. A Eugene, Oregon man, Louis J. Adler, 66 years old, released 7 chickens into the office lobby of the state revenue office. That's the tax office. He released his chickens. And apparently, tax officials said he was frustrated with the tax agency. Yes, agency spokesman says apparently the man was frustrated. Yeah, there are no further details about the source of Mr. Adler's frustration with the Oregon State Tax Agency office, but I have a theory as to what happened here. Having just had to deal with I'll just say an unnamed tax agency because I don't want to upset anyone. But I have a feeling that Mr. Adler, when he initially got in line at the tax office, he just had a basket of eggs. But by the time it was his turn, he had a flock of chickens. That was the punchline. And yeah, anyway. I spent approximately 4 hours on the phone this past week with an unnamed tax agency that I respect and love. And I just want to report that all of their employees were extremely knowledgeable, very helpful, and courteous. And we were able to resolve the issue in a satisfactory manner. And thank you very much. May I have another? All right. All right, so there you have the tax frustration. And we'll just leave that aside. Let's go from Eugene, Oregon. Let's go to the Islamic State. This is from the Personhood file. Not to compare Eugene, Oregon with the Islamic State, please. I'm not even making that comparison. I'll make another appropriate comparison to the Islamic State. I've been to Eugene, Oregon. It's nice. It's very pretty, and it's a nice place. Lots of good folks there, and lots of good chickens. Apparently there. Oh, the chicken, by the way, there was no injury to either human or fowl in the Oregon incident. The chickens were all relocated. Let's see, where did they relocate these chickens to? A Humane Society shelter now is in possession of the chickens.
What, it's not Chester's?
No, they did not go to Kentucky Fried Chicken or Chester's Fried Chicken. Although there's a good chance they will. We're going to get some chickens out here at the McBurney compound come the springtime. I'm going to spend a good portion of my winter building a chicken coop that is tall enough for a human to walk into without bending over. That's my goal. So as you get older, you see, bending over becomes more and more of an issue. It becomes more and more of an issue. So we're trying to eliminate bending over from our life as much as possible as we get older here at the McBurney compound. So we're going to build a full-size chicken coop that we can walk into and scoop up the eggs without having to strain our lower backs as we retrieve our eggs. Now, eggs are kind of expensive, and so we figure if we have a half a dozen chickens, we'll never have to buy eggs at the store again. That's if we can stave off the coyotes and the hawks and the bald eagles. We got bald eagles out here. You know they're just looking for chickens to eat. But I didn't mean to get off on that. I need to go over to the Islamic State which is located in portions of Iraq and Syria. You remember last week, the Islamic State issued a fatwa against children with Down syndrome and basically authorized the killing of children with Down syndrome. That was last week. This week, the Islamic State has sanctioned the harvesting of human organs. That's right. I said they have sanctioned the harvesting of human organs. Now, where have we heard that before recently? Let's see, the harvesting of human organs. Well, let's go on with the story. They announced, did the Islamic State. They say organs that end the captive's life, if removed, the removal of that type is not prohibited. So they basically said you can kill people by removing their vital organs. And there are rumors that there is something of a black market in human organs being transferred and transported out of the Islamic State into the so-called civilized world. Now, this document that was recovered, they say, let's see, this is Reuters reports that the document does not offer any proof that the Islamic State actually engages in harvesting or organ trafficking. And Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards says that the document is heavily edited. Yes, that's right. She says it's heavily edited. He said, in reference to the Center for Medical Progress videos, that Cecile Richards says is heavily edited, reporting that doctors, nurses, medical assistants and physician's assistants right here in the United States in a neighborhood near you are now competing with the Islamic State in the human organ market. So one thing you've got to say about the Islamic State, you may think that they're 7th century throwbacks, but they are making remarkable progress toward catching up with the moral standards of the Western democracies. But, of course, here in the West, we have the slaughter of innocent people and the marketing and harvesting of their body parts. We have it refined. Production occurs on an industrial level here in the West, whereas the Islamic State are still using rusty knives and dull scimitars to do their business, whereas here it's done with the precision of a scalpel and a suction machine. So there, the Islamic State is nothing like Eugene, Oregon, unless there's an abortion clinic in Eugene. I'd have to do some research on that. We hope there's not. But if there is an abortion clinic in Eugene, Oregon, then that would be the only similarity between Eugene, Oregon and the Islamic State. All right, now, let's move on to a shocking story from CNN. From St. Charles, Missouri, a 2-year-old boy died in his room when a space heater was left turned on and his parents did not check on him. The space heater was left unattended. It did not have a thermostat to turn itself off. And the child died of hyperthermia. Both parents, Kathleen and Lucas, both with different last names, told police that they had been using methamphetamine recently and, in fact, had been manufacturing methamphetamine in the home the week preceding their son's death. The mother, Kathleen, is currently pregnant. What's the deal with meth heads and freaks? They get pregnant at the drop of a hat. It's unbelievable. It's just one of those sad ironies of human existence. Now, according to this report from CNN, the parents are facing criminal charges of child abuse that resulted in death. Now, I have to stop at that point, and I have to ask, what is this charge, child abuse that resulted in death? Don't we already have statutes on the books against murder and manslaughter? Do the lawyers and the proctocracy have to be that creative about things? That the parents have been charged with child abuse that resulted in death. And of course, manufacturing a controlled substance in a residence where a child resides, which is another specific charge. So the law has become so convoluted that, I guess you have to be a lawyer to understand all this. And since I don't have legal training, I'm obviously ignorant in many areas, many of the specifics and the finer points of the law. But the bottom line is that these two people murdered their child, either through negligence or outright, through negligence, it appears. And I think that in a just court, a ruling would be made that the mother be allowed to have the baby, the baby be given to an adoption agency and given to someone who has the capacity to raise the child in a civilized manner, and then both parents should be executed in public. Because that's not convoluted at all, and everybody would understand exactly what that meant. But that's not what's going to happen. St. Charles, Missouri. All right, there we have it. The war file. We have a story here from the Washington Times. The Taliban. The Taliban is not dead and gone. In fact, 14 years after the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan, the Taliban is now able to launch coordinated attacks and has done so in recent months across Afghanistan. So the Taliban that George Bush and Barack Obama insisted that we defeated is in fact gaining in strength. According to the Washington Times, America currently has about 10,000 troops in Afghanistan, strictly in a train and assist role. This new Pentagon report that is quoted in the Washington Times article states that, just listen to this, and maybe you can understand why we are destined to lose this war if something doesn't change dramatically. Here's what the brain trust at the Pentagon writes in its latest report. They say the security situation in Afghanistan has deteriorated because of an increase in effective insurgent attacks and higher casualties. And I'm reading that and I'm saying, well, these are the effects, increase in effective insurgent attacks and higher casualties. But that's not the cause. You can't say that the Afghanistan security situation has deteriorated because the enemy has become more effective. The enemy has become more effective because the security situation in Afghanistan has deteriorated. And the smart question to ask is, why has the situation deteriorated to its current state? And the answer is simple. A morally bankrupt nation cannot attempt to impose its morality on another nation. It is bound to fail. And that should be the answer. But instead, we've got retired Army officer and military analyst Robert McGinnis. He says Afghanistan is a country caught in the 14th century. He says unless we're willing to spend trillions of dollars and many more thousands of lives over the next 50 years, then I see no hope of bringing that country into the 21st century and ridding it of radical Islamists. Defense Secretary Ash Carter says of the Taliban and the Afghanistan situation, he says, this is a tough fight, and it's far from over. I know the feeling. It is the real thing. The essence of the moment, that golden moment. Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. I remember when we invaded Afghanistan in November of 2001. I predicted at the time that the war would be extremely long and extremely difficult because the people we were fighting were more dedicated to their God than we are to our God, at least in the proctocracy, in the military, in the government. And indeed, I've been borne out to have been correct in that prediction. And I would further predict that unless something changes dramatically, that the Taliban will once again rule Afghanistan in my lifetime. I believe that will be the case. All right. Now, and I don't want that to happen. I think it's very sad. But I think it is going to happen. All right. Now, let's see here. Earlier this week, as I was watching the news and listening to the radio and doing all the things I do to prepare for this extremely important broadcast, I noticed that the Medstream Media was all set to set up and splash about their new poster boy for Islamophobia, Mohammed Tariq Mahmoud. Are you familiar with this fella? This is the fella, Mohammed and his brother and nine of their beautiful little children were barred from traveling to the U.S. on the instructions of U.S. Homeland Security. They were about to board the plane to come to America, and the Department of Homeland Security just yanked their boarding passes, and they had pictures of the big-eyed little children with tears in their eyes, and it was so touching. The father was weeping and crying and talking about how he'd been discriminated against. And everyone was ready, from MSNBC over to CNN, over to Fox News. They were all getting the stories ready of the wave of Islamophobia. But then, Mohammed Tariq Mahmoud, a Facebook account that was set up at his London address was revealed. And it listed things about the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and basically made this guy look very suspicious. Now, Mr. Mahmoud, he says, he was asked about the Facebook account by a reporter who was embarrassed. The reporter was hoping that this was going to be the poster boy for Islamophobia, and then we're going to be able to show pictures of his weeping children at the airport and condemn all you racist, Bible-thumping, bitter clingers, Islamophobes. But he had to ask him about the Facebook page that seemed to express support for the Taliban and for Al-Qaeda, and Mr. Mahmoud's answer was, maybe hackers are to blame. Perhaps it's hackers. You remember that? Yeah, that's the Anthony Weiner defense. It was hackers. I had nothing to do with any of that. And when he realized that that wasn't going over, he said, well, it could be anything. Perhaps it is a mistake. Perhaps the message was a mistake. Yeah, You remember that? That's the old Brett Favre defense. Yeah, I never meant to send that. Are you kidding me? Did I see Brett Favre in a commercial the other day? I think I saw him in a commercial. How can someone have a career promoting products in a commercial fashion after you do something like that? I mean, has the entire country degenerated to the level of that white trash Green Bay quarterback? I mean, is that where we are? He can now sell products? I would think that he would go underground for life and hope nobody ever noticed him again. Same thing for Anthony Weiner. Although I have not seen Anthony Weiner doing any commercials yet. But we shall wait and see on that. By the way, Mr. Mahmoud, Mohammed Tariq Mahmoud, his brother was denied entry into Israel 8 years ago because they thought he might be a terrorist, okay? Yeah. So no Muslim immigrant martyr this week. But the Medstream Media is on the lookout for any Muslim who's offended in any way by anyone, especially if the melanin content of their skin is lower than the offended person. The Muslim Council of Britain issued a statement in which they said denial of boarding privileges is distressing for Muslims. Yeah, it's distressing. Okay. Well, you know what's distressing to the rest of the world is that people who post their support for Al-Qaeda and the Taliban are trying to buy tickets to America. That's very distressing to everybody else. All right. So the search for the Islamophobic martyr will continue, and they'll find one. They're on the hunt, and they'll do their best to find one. Yes, the Medstream Media. Maybe you're not familiar if you're new to the broadcast, but it is my assertion that virtually every member of the media is on drugs, primarily prescription drugs, antidepressants, and things like that, primarily, except on the weekends. But I'm talking about when they're at work. So that's on the weekend they might use street drugs, but I mean when they go in. When they're sitting at their desk at their word processor, their laptop, they're writing the news, these people are obviously on drugs. So I call them the Medstream Media, just to be clear. All right. Now, I do want to get to some good news. You know, I like to do uplifting, happy news, and I do have some of that. The Daily Mail in London is reporting that the leader of one of Syria's most powerful rebel groups is thought to have been killed in a Russian airstrike near Damascus. Yes. This is one of those moderate Syrian rebel forces that has allied against Bashar al-Assad, that rat-faced dictator. This is one of the guys that I think John McCain bought the guns and Barack Obama ran the guns through Libya and got them to fellas like this guy. His name is Zahran Alush. Alush is the head of Jaish al-Islam. Are you folks familiar with Jaish Islam? It's a moderate rebel faction fighting against dictator Bashar al-Assad. Jaish al-Islam, it means the army of Islam. Yeah. They're moderates, you see. They're on our side, I think. Or we thought. At least we thought that when we sold them the guns. Actually, we gave them the guns. We borrowed the money from our grandchildren to give guns and bombs to the army of Islam in the hopes that we could remove that rat-faced dictator, Bashar al-Assad. That very smart move. Let's see. Alush, according to the Daily Mail, was ideologically at odds with ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Yes, he espoused a more moderate brand of Islam that only called for the killing of Shiites and Alawites. Yes, you know, not everybody. Just these guys over here are the ones we want to behead. So that makes them moderate and someone that we could ally with. Now, it's interesting to watch how RT reports this story. RT is Russia Today. That's Vladimir Putin's personal news service. Everything we report is not a lie. That's ridiculous. I used to work for KGB. We only tell the truth. And on RT, the reporters are reporting that it was a Syrian airstrike that killed the head of the Army of Islam, when in fact everyone knows it was a Russian airstrike. Mr. Putin, it was a Russian airstrike, wasn't it? Well, that is ridiculous. Of course, the Syrians defend themselves against the terrorists. We are only there to help. Yeah, so Vladimir Putin will probably release a photo of himself shirtless in the jet that fired the missile that killed Zahran Alush. But that will only be for domestic political consumption. You won't see that on CNN. All right. So anyway, the good news. You know, all that whole story was just to get to the good news that the head of the Army of Islam has been killed, which that's always a good thing. Now, they have already named his successor. Now, no one's been able to find him, but they have named a successor, and they will continue the fight against Bashar al-Assad. And then after they kill him, they will behead the Shiites and the Alawites And after that, we'll all be friends and everything will be good and right in Syria. I think the new... Yeah, wait a second. We've got this coming across the wire right now. The new head of Jaish al-Islam is Thomas Jefferson. Wow! Who would have thought that? It's amazing. Now at least we know we're in with the right crowd. Yeah. Okay. Meanwhile, in Jerusalem, Breitbart is reporting that Israel's Shin Bet Security Service announced last week that it arrested members of two Hamas terror cells. They were planning mass casualty suicide bombings inside of Israel. Most of the suspects in both of the cells were students. Students, I said. And they attended Al-Quds University in Abu Dis. Now, are you familiar with Al-Quds? If I'm not mistaken, Al-Quds is what the terrorists call Jerusalem. Well, not just the terrorists, but also the imams who preach in the mosques where the terrorists go to church. Well, I guess you don't say church. They go to, what do they, go to mosque? I guess that's what they call it. They all call Jerusalem Al-Quds. So Bard College in New York partnered with Al-Quds University. And are you guys familiar with Bard College? Well, let's just clue you in here, just in case you don't know. The Al-Quds Bard College for Arts and Sciences, located in Abu Dis, represents the first dual degree program between U.S. and Palestinian institutions of higher education. Al-Quds Bard College is also partnered with billionaire George Soros' Open Society Institute and the U.S. Agency for International Development. Al-Quds Board of Trustees includes Rashid Khalidi, who, by the way, was a close personal friend of Barack Obama when the two taught together at the University of Chicago. Khalidi's wife was president of the Arab American Action Network, which received funding from a Chicago nonprofit where Barack Obama served as a paid director from 99 to 02. Obama sat on the Woods Fund board and funded the Arab American Action Network alongside Bill Ayers, a former member of the Weather Underground, who bombed and killed some people back in the 70s. So Bard College is partnered with Al-Quds Bard College for Arts and Sciences. And what do you know? There's two terrorist cells right there in the midst of this fine, respected institution of higher learning that is partnered with some of the finest progressive minds in the Western world, hell-bent on the suicide of Western civilization. Almost out of time, so we got to come back. I made the connection there. I've connected the dots. Yes, between Bard College in New York and the Al-Quds College of Arts and Sciences, you know, the art of stabbing Jews, the science of digging tunnels so that you can get into Israel and stab Jews, the art and science of suicide bombings in Israel so that we can kill Jews. That's the art. Yeah, it's a liberal arts college, is what it is. There, a little different than what we have here, at least for the moment. We don't have suicide bombers yet here in America. At least not just your average college student. Now we do have mass shooting gunmen, maniacs, psycho pothead gamers, who for some reason explode and butcher their fellow students. We have that. So you can see how, well, at least they can relate to one another at both Al-Quds and at Bard College in New York. All right. Now we go to reason number 1023 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. A cafeteria worker in Idaho was moved almost to tears by a 12-year-old student who said she was hungry. "I'm hungry," she said. And so the cafeteria worker took a look to the left, took a look to the right, looked at the poor weeping child, and gave the child a free lunch. Yes. So this is reason number 1023 that you should not allow your children to matriculate in the government schools, because they may be taught that there is a such thing as a free lunch, and there is not. The school district fired the cafeteria worker for theft. Yes, get this. The student, well, I don't want to read that part. Let me see here. Oh, the school district placed the cafeteria worker on leave and was making a determination to fire her when the school teacher said, "I'll pay for the lunch myself." But her supervisor said, "No, you already stole the lunch and you gave it to the kid. That's theft. You're fired." And they fired her. Yes, they fired her for theft and making inaccurate transactions, just in case there was any confusion about what theft means. The inaccuracy, see, of a theft is that you take something and then you don't pay for it. And so you end up with an inaccurate transaction. The cafeteria worker says, "Well, it just breaks my heart. But what do you do when a kid tells you that they're hungry and they don't have any money? What do you do? That's what I'm wondering. Why didn't you buy the kid the lunch? I mean, you know what the cost of the lunch is? Hold on here. $1.70. Why couldn't the teacher reach in her pocket and give the kid a couple of bucks? I mean, I'm not against doing a good deed. But you shouldn't steal the lunch from the school. Yeah, well, yeah. This is what your children will learn at the government school. See, even the teachers are just parasites attached to a socialist system, where they believe everything is everybody's and it's everything's paid for. Anyways, that's reason number. That's reason number 1023. There is a petition circulating. It has 38,000 signatures. Tens of thousands of people have rushed to the defense of this lying, thieving cafeteria worker. 38,000 Bernie Sanders supporters have obviously... The petition states that lunchroom policies should prioritize kindness and making sure kids receive a nutritious lunch so that they can be ready to learn. Yeah. You're not going to find a nutritious lunch at a cafeteria, number one. And number two, lunchroom policies... Well, I suppose you can be kind in the lunchroom, but stealing other people's stuff is not kind. It's a crime, for crying out loud. All right. Now, reason number 1022, in no particular order, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. We go to Minneapolis, Minnesota. A teacher is suing the school district. No, the teacher is planning to sue. Let me say that again. The teacher is planning. One reason to keep your kids out of the government schools is because they'll end up not being able to spit out a sentence. I went to public schools, and this happens to me all the time. I was obviously left handicapped by the government schools. I have a hard time reading, thinking, and speaking all at the same time sometimes. A teacher in the St. Paul Public Schools is planning to sue the district, saying that the district has failed to keep teachers safe from the students. A law firm has been retained, That's right. And what happened here is this teacher was beaten, slammed, and choked by a 16-year-old St. Paul student at Center High School. Fonte O'Bannon is the 16-year-old who beat up his teacher. He's accused of slamming, do I have the teacher's name here? Well, it's slamming the teacher into a cafeteria table when the teacher was trying to break up a fight between Fonte and another student. Fonte choked the teacher until he was unconscious. That's pretty serious. The teacher suffered brain damage and a concussion and required hospitalization. Yeah. Now, the law firm who's been retained by the teacher, who should be fairly embarrassed, having been throttled by a 16-year-old, that's pretty embarrassing. But, I mean, you look at some of these kids. I mean, remember the kid down in Missouri? What was it? What was the town there? It was a big story. Ferguson. That kid, I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to tangle with that kid. He was a big kid. Yeah. Let's see. The law firm retained by the teacher says that the school district had knowledge of the harassment, violence, or abusive, assaultive behavior. What's assaultive behavior? Can't you just say assault? Lawyers can't just say assault. They have to say assaultive behavior. It's behavior that could be construed as assault if indeed an assault occurred. We don't want to imply that assault did occur, but if an assault did occur or was thought to have occurred, it could be interpolated as assaultive behavior. Mm-hmm. The school district had knowledge of the assaultive behavior of its students, but did not take any appropriate disciplinary action. There you go. And there's the crux of the story right there. Is that reason number 1022 not to send your kids to the government schools or to pull them out if you're sending them there, is that the administrators and teachers are not allowed to administer appropriate disciplinary action, you see. And the fact is that the place for appropriate disciplinary action lies with the father and mother of the child and not with some state bureaucrat who's hired to manage their education. And so they're incapable of appropriate disciplinary action. And kids between the age of about 9 months and 19 years, they need appropriate disciplinary action on a regular basis. They need to be trained. They need to be educated. And that needs to be done by the parents because the schools are obviously incapable of doing it. Not only are they incapable of it, they have no right to do it, and they have exceeded their authority. The state does not have the authority to educate or discipline children. That is the responsibility of parents. But, of course, parents abrogate that authority, and they hand it over to the state. And what do you get? You get some a teacher beat half to death by a 16-year-old thug. And what's the teacher's only option, of course, in the proctocracy? The teacher's going to sue, by golly. That'll make things right. That will ensure appropriate disciplinary action in the future when the school district is forced to fork out several hundreds of thousands of dollars to the teacher who was beaten by the student that he did not know how to discipline. He had no ability to discipline him. He was not even given the tools to discipline him. And in fact, the teacher doesn't even have the right to discipline the kid, for crying out loud. Parents handing over their kids to the government schools. It's just embarrassing. You know, I think one of the main problems we're going to encounter here in America over the next decade or so is an epidemic of violence by children who hate their parents. I think I've said this on the show before, but I think it's only growing exponentially. Parents who fail to properly raise their children, they end up creating in their children a deep-seated hatred and insecurity that will often express itself in violence. But at the very least, it will express itself as hatred. Case in point, Madonna's teenage son, Rocco, hates his mom. He refused to spend the holiday break with his mother, Madonna, at her extremely well-appointed Manhattan townhouse. You can imagine Madonna's got a pretty nice house, right? I imagine she has all the comforts of home, but her son Rocco does not want to go there. And now a Manhattan Superior Court judge has ordered Rocco to spend the holidays with his mom. So this is where you end up. Well, of course, Madonna being the extreme example of a mother who has inculcated in her child a deep sense of resentment and hatred, because she is an extremely poor example of how to be a responsible adult. And so Rocco does not want to spend the holidays with his mom, and now he's been ordered to by a judge. A source close to the affair said that the boy said he doesn't want to stay with her. He says he's not getting along with his mom, which is not a surprise for a child that age. Now, Rocco's 15. He hates his mom. He refuses to spend the holidays in her extremely well-appointed Manhattan townhouse. Now, I have a daughter who's almost 15. And when it came to holiday time, we did not need a judge to intervene to get her to stay with us. She stayed with us willingly. And she was even happy about it. And she even bought Christmas presents for her sisters. And for that, she received a pair of parakeets, which was the big hit around the McBurney compound this holiday season. But our hearts go out to poor Rocco. I don't know what his last name is. Who's Madonna married to these days? We don't know. Let's see. Who's the kid's father? Madonna's married to Madonna, the one person she loves. Guy Ritchie is the kid's father. So maybe his last name is Ritchie, or maybe he doesn't have a last name. Maybe he's like Madonna, and that's another reason he hates her. He's like, Mom, I don't even know what my last name is. I can only suspect who my father is, you disgusting slut. And you're my mother? Strutting around stage at 50 years old like a stripper? You think I want to spend the weekend with that? Please. So a judge has to step in. It's just sad. But that's it. That's the show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you all for being here at the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, at TheologyOnline.com, and American Right to Life. And, of course, my other brother, Darrow, who makes it all happen. Here at the Weekly Worldview Studio, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.